Hey there, it's Mike Tramp, and you're listening to White Line Fever, where rock and roll is still alive like it always has been, and it always will be.
Very, very special guest is Dave Ellison from Megadeth. How are you, Dave?
Great, Steve. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. Thanks for joining us. Now, the issue at hand is a spoken word tour. And I just wondered, like, do you come up with the idea of a spoken word tour, or does a promoter give you a ring? Because it's not an obvious choice. It's not an obvious thing to do, is it? I mean, what's the story?
No, it's a good question, actually. You know, it's funny. Last year when Megadeth was scheduled to be on Soundwave, which didn't happen, literally that exact same like weekend that all was going down, a friend of mine who's a manager in Los Angeles called me and said, hey, just got a call about, you know, you going down and doing a spoken word tour in Australia, you know? And I said, that would be great. You know, obviously, anytime I can get to Australia is good by me. I thought I was going next week, but I guess I'm not, you know. So it's funny that, you know, it took like a year, you know, to kind of, they were ready to do it. I just needed to find the hole in my schedule, quite honestly, to do it. So it's really, you know, I thought it was a great idea. At first I thought, spoken word, what the hell am I going to talk about, you know, but, the truth of it is with the book, My Life with Death, you know, that really lays out the basis of not only my own life, but of obviously Megadeth, you know, story of a musician and just kind of the whole thing, you know, so that's certainly the basis of it. But, you know, when you're putting a book together, you realize you have, you know, you form a narrative and you know, the story starts to kind of flush itself out and you realize, okay, in this book, I need to go in this direction. Well, with spoken word, you know, I can take it in an entirely different direction if I want. And we're also going to have a Q&A portion of it, so it can go in any direction. And so to me, what's most important is that this be an interactive, cool time with me and the fans and something that, you know, that you wouldn't get if you went to Soundwave or to a big arena show or something like that. This is something on a much smaller, cooler level, you know, cool level that you can, you know, we can have, you know, some, you know, kind of like touch each other kind of moment, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Now, the Soundwave appearance was called off, as we know, because of a feud or a tiff between Dave Mustaine and AJ Matter, the promoter. It was about the bill of a sideshow, if I remember it correctly. Is that feud still going, or is it have the differences been settled?
No, that's long been over. And you know, it's one of these things where, you know, we've been through a couple of internal changes, you know, management and some things like that. And that, quite honestly, that was all happening right as all that was going on. So that was really, I think, you know, a bigger part of what that was about. And it, you know, Dave is very hands-on. He's very passionate about every decision that gets made in Megadeth. And you know, and I like to think that moving forward, you know, that won't be an issue anymore. You know what I mean? Those changes have been made internally from our side, which will hopefully be smooth sailing now. And, you know, can't wait for Megadeth to get back down to Australia and can't wait for, you know, who knows, maybe even on Soundwave again. So, I think we've turned a good corner and everything's good now.
Now, I have to ask you this, because it's newsworthy. The new lineup of Megadeth, at the moment, it's all rumors. Anything you can confirm?
No, nothing I can confirm. it's not quite there yet. It's not something I'm at liberty to talk about, because we're just turning some corners into the studio. Rehearsals, continuing the final stages of the pre-production before we get started, you know, writing. So you will know as soon as I know, if not a day ahead, because you're in Australia and I'm in America.
I can tell you what the weather's going to be like tomorrow. It's very nice. Okay, I did say that we were going to play some music. Anything from your entire career. I mean, anything at all, as long as I can find it.
Sure. Well, let's start start out with Wake Up Dead. We'll kick it off with that. It's a good opening track.
I sneak in my own house. It's 4 in the morning. I had too much to drink. Said I was having a voice. I creep in my bedroom. I slip into bed. I know if I wake her, I'll wake up.
Everybody, this is David Allison from Megadeth. We are hanging here on White Line Fever.
Okay, welcome back to the program. Before I introduce our guest, just a bit of housekeeping. We're on Twitter, WLF Podcast, and we're also, you can find us on the internet, whitelinefever.ning.com. And our guest, I always say our guest is special, but it's not just welcome to the program, but it's welcome to Rugby League, to David Collier, the new and the first ever CEO of the RLIF. Welcome, David.
Hi, Steve.
Nathan, thanks for joining us. I'd imagine you're in your first 2 weeks in the job, so I imagine things are quite busy.
Yeah, we officially start this week, but certainly already been around meeting a lot of people in rugby league, and just planning to come down to see the Anzac games at the end of the month. We've got a board meeting as well in Australia in Brisbane towards the start of May. So a lot of work to do before then.
There are lots of things you couldn't tell us at the press conference, maybe are a bit clearer now, which is your headquarters are going to be in London. Can you tell us where in London? Can you tell us how big your staff is going to be?
Sure. I mean, the staffing will depend on the strategic plan, and that is being completed. It's something we'll be discussing at the board meeting in early May. The headquarters in London, we already have a European Federation based in London who have facilities, and initially we'll be based with the European Federation there, and they'll be working from there as the organisation grows, Steve.
Yeah, I was really interested in your press conference at the end when they asked you about international eligibility, and you said that you had quite a lot of experience in that area. You'd be aware, or maybe I think it's probably the same in most sports. It's a topic that fans love to argue over. Is that because you have experience in that area? Is that one of the first areas you're going to address?
I wouldn't say it's necessarily one of the first. I think the top priority is the calendar of events. But certainly in any international governing body, eligibility is one of the areas that you look at. And as I said in the press conference, it's quite a complex area these days as more and more people are transient, more and more people have mixed nationality parentage. But clearly there's also a slight difference between international eligibility and eligibility to play in domestic competitions. So those are the two things we'll be looking at.
Yeah, and can you give us your initial impressions of the regulations as they are in rugby league?
Well, I've not looked at them yet in detail, Steve, and it's something I've said to the board that my experience of international regulations is that it needs to be reviewed quite regularly, and by quite regularly, I would think about every 4 years, normally after a World Cup, because regulations do change, and regulations in different sports change quite dramatically. For instance, the International Olympic Committee regulations are much less stringent than most national sports, national governing bodies. And I think that's also true for rugby league as well.
Can you tell us, David, when you first became aware of the sport of rugby league? Do you remember the first time you even knew it existed?
Sure. 1970s, obviously, we had a lot of coverage in the UK. And, you know, certainly the days of Alex Murphy, Roger Millwood, sort of both the St. Helens sides at that time, the Hull sides at that time. So, you know, first grew up with it as long ago as that.
And when did Nigel, or I suppose it was Nigel, when did this position first come onto your radar?
Certainly a few weeks ago. And I did know Nigel because in the UK we have something called the Five Sports, which is cricket, rugby union, rugby league, lawn tennis and association football, the chief executives who have all met up fairly regularly, met with our ministers. So obviously we'd worked together a little bit there. Also, I'd attended the League World Cup in the UK and the semi-final between England and New Zealand, which, you know, clearly was one of the greatest rugby league games I've seen, and really was mouth-watering for the 2017 World Cup in Australia and New Zealand. So, no that, but really the whole recruitment was actually handled through an independent group of headhunters, and it was they who I spoke to a few weeks ago now.
What do you see as we'll let you go and we'll continue with the print part of this interview shortly, but what do you see as your biggest challenge in this position?
I think the biggest challenge is to get the calendar of events sorted for the next either 8 or 12 year period. It's so critical to the sport. There's been a lot of talk about it. There's a lot of talk about which domestic club events, like the World Club Challenge, how does that fit with the NRL? How does that fit with Super League? How does that fit with international events? Should we have more than just the World Cup as an international event? And all of that needs actually putting together into one cohesive calendar of events. And, you know, the thing that I've learned as well from other sports is that one of the critical areas that is to allow players rest periods during that calendar so that, you know, they're fresh and are performing at the highest level throughout the year.
Right, okay. Well, if you'll just bear with us for 30 seconds, I have to just go for a bit more housekeeping for the audio part of this interview. We're on Stitcher. We're on the brand new RL Internet Radio. If you go to whitelinefever.ning.com, you can hit the donate button and everything helps. Also, if you want to shop on Amazon, you hit the button there. Quickly, some donors. Tim Hishon, Sean Taggart, Hudson Burns, Andy O'Brien, Leonard Andrew, Gavin Rennick, and I've mentioned Anthony Burns. I don't know if they're related. Anyway, thanks for joining us, David. We're going to continue this interview, and here's some music.
Hello, everybody. This is Ron Bumblefoot Thal. You might know me from Guns N' Roses or not. And you're listening. You're listening to White Line Fever.
Welcome back to White Line Fever. It's episode 73, and our next guest is Joey Vera from Armored Saint, Fate's Warning, but most importantly, for the purposes of this conversation, from Motor Sister. How are you, Joey?
I'm good, thanks. How are you doing?
Yeah, that's a bit of a mouthful of that. I imagine the worst thing about doing interviews to promote, I'm not too bad, the worst thing about doing interviews to promote a new project is that you have to go through the story again. So if you like, I'll kind of, for the sake of the listeners, I'll save you the time. About Motor Sister, it was formed at Scott Ian's. Correct me if I make any mistakes. It was formed at Scott Ian's 50th. They are doing songs for Mother Superior, and at first there was no thought of making a record, but now you have. You've got a record out called Ride. Is all that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So, what's it? It must be a great feeling to be resurrecting these songs, I suppose, and taking them to a new audience.
Yeah, it's funny, like, this is, what we did that night at the party was really, like, we were basically a cover band, and we were covering all the great songs from this band, Mother Superior, which maybe a lot of people have never heard of before, but we were all fans of and still are, and so for us it was a lot of fun. It was like just playing a bunch of these great tunes with Jim Wilson within Mother Superior, and it was just a blast to just kind of get together and play a bunch of songs that we all listened to on record, and that's really it was. I mean, that's all it was, and the fact that it turned into something else is completely beyond anything that we even thought of, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I had a look for Mother Superior in my sort of iTunes, and I had one song, the A-Hole song, which always comes on first because it starts with, starts with A. So, but what do you like? What do the guys, what do you and the guys and girls like so much about Mother Superior?
Well, I just think that it appeals to us because they have a strong kind of influence and hold on music that we all grew up on, which is the music from the 70s. And we grew up with, all of us are kids of the 70s, all of us in the band and Jim as well. We grew up listening to all that stuff, all the 70s. I mean, anything from 69 to 78, you know what I mean? And that was like the golden era for us of hard rock music, rock music, even funk and soul. I mean, this is such a great golden era, that period of time. And Mother Superior has been one of the few bands playing that kind of music, or music that's kind of influenced from there, that's around. So they just kind of appealed to us in that sense. They also, Mother Superior also has this a little bit of a it's a funny band because they could do stuff that's very what you might call classic rockish type of stuff, but then also they have songs that have a little bit of a punk rock edge to it.
Yeah.
And then there were some songs that have a little funky, it's a kind of funky R&B thing going on. So they kind of straddled the line of a lot of different musical styles, and they did it really well. So that's just in particular, and they had this great energy when they were performing live. They're a trio, and when they play in LA, we would all go see them, and they're just a great live band as well. So, I mean, it just really appealed to us on a lot of different levels.
Yeah, and
great songwriting.
Sorry, mate. I was just gonna say, Jim must feel like all his Christmases come at once. That an illustrious group of musicians have chosen to sort of resurrect the songs and put them out there again. I mean, it doesn't happen to a lot of bands that have been broken up for a number of years, does it? It's a pretty remarkable thing for him.
Yeah, it is. And he's, I've heard him speak in interviews that he's, very grateful and honored to be playing with us, even though we're the ones that are honored to be playing with him. But he's, you know, he's expressed that he's super grateful and honored and stoked that, like, you know, that, I mean, it's just sort of been snowballing. You know, it started out as he was honored, like, oh, you want to play my songs at a party, you're cool. And then next thing, oh, now we're going to record my songs. Oh, now we're playing live shows. Oh, now we're doing press. Oh my God. Now we're doing the video. And so, holy, you know, it's like, he's like beside himself, you know, because now, you know, and this is part of our intention in the first place was to celebrate the music of this band, Mother Superior. And, you know, we always said to each other, I wish more people knew about this band because people don't know what they're missing. And so now that's what's happening, is that more people are becoming aware, and Jim is getting letters and emails and, you know, inquiries from all over the world of people that have never heard of Mother Superior before. So he's very gracious for that.
I've got a couple of follow-up questions to that, but I did warn you that I'd ask you to play a song. Have you thought about what you'd like the first one to be?
Yeah, sure. Let's play Ride Motor Sister Ride. Joey Vera from Armored Saint and Motor Sister and Faith Warning and just kidding. And you're listening to White Line Fever.
Okay, welcome back to the program. We've been around long enough now that we actually have repeat guests. And we've got Tommy Boyce here from the Casanovas. He's actually been on before. How are you, Tommy?
Good, mate. How are you?
I'm good. Now, it's a big week for you, isn't it? You've got a new record coming out.
Indeed, we have. Yeah, so Friday we're going to put it out and launch it and play a gig at the same time.
I'd love to be down there for that. It's called Terra Casanova. How long have you been working on it?
We went into the studio and recorded it nearly a year and a half ago. And prior to that, we'd been in pre-production for probably like a year or something. It's just like kind of really takes a lot of time because everyone works and stuff, and you know, it's nothing's kind of like first priority anymore these days. So, you know, it takes some time.
It's been now. Is it really been like 9 years since the last record? Is that right?
Yep.
That is.
Yeah, 9 years. Yeah.
Right. I did read one news story online saying that part of it, you know, like a lot of it was, like you said, people have jobs and they've got other priorities, but there were some other things, there's some legal things, other dramas that have held you up.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so like we had a problem with our ex-manager and just about money, and so we had to go to court and stuff, and it was a real drag. So that definitely took the wind out of our sails and, you know, took a bit of motivation away from the band.
You did put out a single in the intervening period that might have dealt with that.
dealt with it at an emotional level, yeah. For sure, yeah.
So I think we already had that on the show at the time. So is it resolved? Is everything cool now?
Oh, yeah. Look, I mean, it's something I don't even think about anymore, like really, unless it gets brought up. So, yeah, it's all fine. I mean, I wasn't really that happy with the outcome, but it's so long ago now, it doesn't matter, you know?
Yeah, okay. And tell if you could, everyone else, once you put it out, everyone else will be giving their opinion on the direction and influences and what you're trying to achieve. So I might as well let you offer an opinion first. What?
On the new record?
On Terra Casanova.
Yeah. We've definitely evolved, and it's not like we're going to be doing anything like vastly different, but I reckon it's improved, you know, and I think the songwriting's matured, and just there's some influences are probably more pluralistic, so there's kind of more going on, you know, influence wise, and I don't know, I think also just a stronger kind of melodic sense to the record, so yeah, and lyrically as well, so I just sort of think it's a case of the band kind of getting better as it gets older rather than sort of fizzling out, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. The first record was more kind of riffy, wasn't it? The second record had a bit more sort of Cheap Trick, you know, sort of, I won't use the word power pop, but sort of pop hard rock influence.
Yeah, yeah.
Trying to be a bit more playful on the second record, you know?
Probably a bit more of that on this record as well.
Yeah. And when... Tommy, are there things that you hear now that influence you, or are you done with influences? Do you always go back into your old record collection when you're writing, or do you?
Yeah, that's a good question. Whether I find modern, you know, to be honest, in terms of the Casanovas, like I find new discoveries of old material to be my greatest source of inspiration.
Yeah.
I'm constantly, you know, finding new records that like, oh, what? I mean, new old records.
Yeah.
Like, that's so good. I can't believe I didn't know that, you know, 15, 20 years ago. And, you know, they always really inspire me, and it's actually good I didn't know them all before because you sort of take them for granted then.
Yeah.
But what was it? Recently I've been listening a lot to, I just love that. I really, really love that late 70s new wave of British heavy metal bands like Priest and Iron Maiden.
Yeah.
And I've been really getting into early Judas Priest, like Sad Wings of Destiny, I reckon is an absolutely killer record. And I can't get enough. Like I spent the whole weekend surfing, and whenever I go surfing, I always have a song just running through my head. And I had Victims of Change by Judas Priest just blaring through my head constantly when I was out in the water. So, yeah, just stuff like that makes a real impression on me. And of new stuff that's out at the moment, like I hear a fair bit, you know, I hear it on Triple R, like community radio down here and stuff, but it doesn't tend to make as much of an impact on me. I don't know why. You know, it's just, I think that there's an extent to which, like, back then it was really like quite a glory period, you know?
Yeah.
And it's just would have been a great time to be around and playing music and or being a fan. And I mean, the same could be said of the late 60s as well. I just think that sort of 20-year period around then, from the mid-60s to probably, you know, early 80s or whatever. That's just like a golden musical period in terms of rock and roll.
Okay, well, for logistical reasons, which we won't bore the listeners with, we can't play a song off a new record as right now, but we will in the next episode. So what was that Judas Priest song again? Let's play that, eh?
Yeah, for sure. It's Victims of Change from Sad Wings of Destiny.
We'll be right back. she was wonderful. When she was fine. When she was beautiful. When she was mine.
White Line Fever, going to run land down under, going to turn around the corner way down yonder, but I'm not even going to try to rhyme anymore. Michael Monroe here for White Line Fever, and you get a chance, come and check us out live. We're going to rock your socks off and whatever, rock like fuck, that's what I say, okay? Come on down and rock on.